The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou. forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Happy Monday. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Joining us on the podcast today from way out west, the City of Angels, is Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you doing? And where can the fans find you?
Fans can find me at Smith_MLB. Doing all right. Happy that we're able to salvage the series.
Yeah, a lot to talk about in that. Also joining us from the Grand Strand, aka Myrtle Beach, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing? And where can the fans find you and the account?
I'm pretty annoyed with this team, but we'll be getting into plenty of that this episode. I can be found at CushmanMLB. The podcast account is at Bastards_Boston. Find my baseball only Facebook account, Terry Talks Sox. We're on Instagram. We also started a Substack last week. So search for the Bastards on that if you want to see what we have to say in print form. It's kind of a panel style, so it's not your typical article. We just all contribute a few paragraphs to what the topic is. So kind of a different twist when it comes to blogging.
Always fun to have other touch points, other places to communicate and talk Sox. Taking a quick look at the standings after a 2-2 weekend four-game series split against the Chicago White Sox. We are still in third place, 12 games back at 500. Two games behind the Yankees is the Orioles at 42-22. A half a game behind us is the Blue Jays at 32-33. And a game and a half behind us is the Rays at 31-34. But as you guys can tell, there is a bit of tension, a bit of frustration with the team. So let's go ahead and take a quick temperature check after the weekend series. Charlie, how are you feeling?
I was pretty frustrated. I actually called Terrence on the way to Target yesterday. I was pretty PO'd. I don't feel very good. And this team is nothing more than a you better pray that you split a series because you're not going to be taking any series. It's just this team sadly doesn't have the power. It's not a, you know, it's not lack of want, because some of these guys, you can tell they really want it and you can tell that they're really trying, but unfortunately skill can only do, you know, will has so much before skill comes into play. And when you get outplayed by teams that have skill and power and talent and, you know, ownership support, you're going to get worked. And those middle two games, they got outscored 13-3. And that shouldn't happen against the worst team in baseball when you're the Boston Red Sox. It's not a reflection on them. It's a reflection on you. So I don't feel very good, and I don't think I'm alone when I say that. It was pretty frustrating watching the third game of this series. When I called Terry, I was pretty upset, and it was almost, you know, off, I'm going to go do something else. It was just that feeling that I had where, you know, we might win, we might lose the fourth game. I'm happy we won the fourth one, but let me tell you, morale can't be very great in Boston when you get smoked in two games against the Chicago White Sox.
Terry?
I mean, this was an opportunity to take at least three out of four, maybe pleasantly surprise everyone by sweeping the series. You got a brutal week coming up, the most brutal of the entire season, against arguably the two very best teams in Major League Baseball. You got the Phillies, who are head and shoulders better than everyone in the National League. And then you got the New York Yankees, who I said as recently as a week or so ago, probably going to go back to the World Series for the first time since 2009. So, you know, if you could have swept the White Sox, maybe you win two out of those six games. You kind of keep yourself afloat. You got the Blue Jays twice this month. We're probably going to be the team that gets them on the right track, I'm assuming. They've got all the major national writers want to link Blue Jays players to big trades. I forget which team was talking about Vladimir Guerrero today, but there's a little bit of interest with him. Kevin Gausman would generate a ton of interest. But you also have a front office where most of their butts are on the line, and perhaps they'll be a little hesitant to deal. So I don't, you know, maybe we do get Toronto right. The White Sox had lost, I think it was 14 games in a row. And then we took two in a row and nearly won today's finale. We scored a run late. I want to say it was in the bottom of the ninth. And that tied it, got it to extras. Red Sox win it. Top of the ninth. Yeah, that's right. We were in Chicago. And so anyway, I mean, we were losing that game until almost the very end of it and salvaged the split. So I'm a little annoyed, but, you know, that's just been the theme of this decade for Boston Red Sox fans.
I mean, on paper, it's a series, you know, you think three out of four. I think when Charlie had asked me predictions, that's what I put. I think I went red, white, red, red. In the Twitter messages in between each other, knowing that we got Garrett Crochet in the second game, I figured, you know, this lineup has been, you know, kind of taking its lumps along the way. It's definitely not the one that we put on the, I guess, on the billboard when we were advertising, hey, you know, what this team could be at full potential. But, you know, I will push back a little bit on the way that this team feels. It's definitely disappointing to split against the White Sox. I'm not going to say anything against that, but it doesn't feel the way it did a couple of years ago when you knew, hey, man, we gave up a crooked number, games over. Offense can't come back. Bullpen is terrible. This team is imploding, and we've got 70, 80 more games to watch. Like, this team still fights. This team still scraps. You know, they're active on the base paths. They're pushing the issue. You know, they're trying to do whatever they can to get those victories, to, you know, try to find some wins in the margins. And that at least makes it a more entertaining product to watch, because, like you guys mentioned, these guys do care, right? It's not a lifeless product that's out on the diamond. Now, is it a good product? Is it the product we were hoping to watch? Is it the product that, you know, Boston fans have come to be accustomed to? Absolutely not. You know, there's no way that you can spin it. There's no way that you can frame it. There's not really much that you can say in terms of the promise of the organization at this moment in time, moving forward towards a postseason berth, which is a real bummer. But, you know, you got to give the team credit for, you know, never saying die and never quitting. And, you know, they could have easily packed it in today. You know, guys that aren't supposed to be contributing are manufacturing runs, which is, you know, something that we're definitely going to be covering in the studs and duds segment. But these are the ones that you have to win, right? As you mentioned, they had lost 14 straight coming into this series. We can't be the team that is the tonic for the rest of the league. Like, we got to be able to win the games against these kind of teams if we want to be saying, you know, we're making steps towards returning to relevance. Bobby Bowden, the head football coach at my alma mater, says, first you lose big, then you lose small, then you win big. And I think we're somewhere in between losing big and losing small, but we're not even doing it with the guys that we're supposed to be doing it with. So it's tough to monitor what that progress is. But I got to give credit to the guys for fighting. I got to give credit to the team for making it at least a little bit more entertaining to watch, because we have watched some sorry teams and some sorry efforts and some teams that have really mailed it in with a lot of baseball left to be played. So I'm grateful that, you know, the product feels different. You know, it doesn't feel like they've given up, because then it makes me want to continue to watch. Charlie, you got something you want to add?
Yeah, as far as the Chicago White Sox were concerned, you mentioned the fact that they had lost 14 games in a row. I literally had to check that because I was like, there's no way that was the 14th one in a row. Sure enough, it was. They actually went a streak of 8 games, and 7 of those 8 games in which they still lost, they scored 3 runs or less, including a 4-game set in which they only scored 1 run or 2. 3 of those games, they lost 5-1, 4-1, 3-1. 4 of those games were against Baltimore. 2 were against the Cubs. 3 were against the Milwaukee Brewers. So it's not like they were playing dog teams. They are the bottom dog. They're just the bottom team. They're not even dog. But it goes to just show you, I mean, literally, you need to take 3 out of 4 in this series. You have to. And you were right, Cody. You went red, white, red, red. Every single person said red, white, red, red, except for me. I said red, white, red, white. Because this team is a 500 team, and last temperature check, I said the same thing. You will split every series in a 3-game set. You'll take 2 out of 3. The next 3-game set, you'll lose 2 out of 3. This is nothing better than a 500 team until you face real competition. For the Boston Red Sox, it's going to get real, real soon. They are going to have a very, very difficult time. And Terry and I had talked about this. When you're facing teams that are hitting home runs at will, the Philadelphia Phillies have 2 or 3 guys that can bang balls out of there, no problem. The New York Yankees have Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is hitting home runs when he feels like it. He's that on point. So there's a very good chance you're going to be 4 games under 500 or worse after that 6-game set. So you have to win these games against these bad teams, or you are just going to be laughed at. We're already getting laughed at. Now it's just going to be worse. So, I mean, numbers don't lie. Stats don't lie. And it's going to get bad for us in a little bit. I hate to be that open and honest and brutal, but it's going to hurt soon. It's going to really hurt.
Last thing I want to point out is I think the fan base is somewhat fatigued now, and I'm starting to see social media accounts that I used to butt heads with. I'm seeing it with them. Like, they would come at me for just being my typical critical self of this team. And now you can tell that all the joy is sucked out of them. There was one particular account. It was the Shane Victorino Grand Slam from 2013 ALCS or World Series, I forget which one. In the opposite one, he drove in 3 on a wall ball double. Whenever you see that, you're instantly brought back to a happier time. That's your first thought. Then your second thought is, man, it's been so long since we felt this good about our team. And then another account, who I definitely used to clash with quite a bit, showed a Manny Ramirez home run from, I think, 2007. And he said that the fall from grace that this team has had is, you know, essentially mind-boggling. And that's where we're at. That's where we're at. And you can look at a lineup and know, okay, this is a pretty good lineup. You know, if the stars align, this could really accomplish something. And then today, I mean, Devers is hurt. O'Neill's been out since game two. It's just, you got three or four guys that have no business being in the major leagues and they're in that lineup. And it's just brutal. But that's what my temperature is.
Well, with all of this positivity, all of this uppity energy, let's get it going on the main segment of the evening. With the two-game split against a last-place team, I don't think it'll be appropriate to start with studs of the studs and duds. So, Charlie, why don't you kick it off with your stud for the weekend? Who was the dud you'd like to highlight?
So, typically when and this is not a crack. I'm just trying to make like a little joke. When you talk to your therapist, it's patient, you know, confidentiality and all that. And for those that were, you know, have talked to mental health therapists and whatnot, Terry was my mental health therapist yesterday, for the lack of a better term, because I was really upset. I was really, really upset. And I preface it like this because I've actually talked to Terry multiple times throughout the years, not about baseball stuff. And he actually, surprisingly enough, to many people's surprise, has talked me off the ledge when I've been really like, just I'm good. I'm done. Like this is, I'm full of, like, I almost dropped an F-bomb, you know, like done. So I'm complaining to Terry about the third game, and the Boston Red Sox are playing, you know, the White Sox, obviously, and you have Brian Baio. The game is tied 1-1. And you've got Gavin Sheets, who's not a crazy hitter, but you probably want to be a little bit more diplomatic with a pitch. You probably don't want to throw a meatball right down Main Street, because when you throw off speed right down the pipe with a little bit of dip, I don't know how you're throwing that pitch on 0-1 with the bases loaded and two outs. And then now you've put your team in a significant hole. You're down 5-1. This is not the type of team that's going to be able to rally four runs together. When we get four runs, we call that a game if we're lucky. We got four. We were down four runs like that. It took no time at all. You had two outs. You had a runner on second. And then slowly but surely, you walk the next batter, runner at first and second. You walk the batter after that. Now you got the bases loaded. You got an infield single, which tied the game. And then moments later, all the wheels fell off for Brian Baio with two outs. With two outs. This is supposed to be the guy, Brian Baio, for those that haven't, you know, figured it out yet. Brian Baio was my dud for this series. I want Brian Baio to be the future ace of this team. He is getting surpassed not by one guy, not by two guys, possibly three right now, because that's a mistake pitch. 0-1, two outs, bases loaded. You do not throw a changeup right down Main Street easy for everybody to hit. Gavin Sheets, not a crazy good hitter. But if Gavin Sheets could hit that pitch, that tells me that 85% of baseball players could probably nail that changeup too and send that over the fence for four runs. So that to me is just not a smart baseball play, not a smart baseball decision. And Brian Baio's not dumb. So I don't know why they thought changeup down the middle would be a good idea, but you got to make them work, man. You cannot afford to throw pitches right down Main Street. Paint corners, throw up and away, make them work for it, man. That was just knife in the heart for me. It totally took me out, and I was in a sour mood for the rest of the evening. So, Baio, dud.
Terry?
The fan base is extremely frustrated with Baio at this point. He's just not taking that step forward, and you really thought he was the ace of the future, and perhaps he still could be, but he's taking the long road to get there. And I'm trying to pull up last season's numbers here, pre-All-Star. There we go. He had a pretty decent start to the year last year. Yeah, okay, so here we go. In his first 14 starts, this was before the All-Star break, he had a 3.04 ERA. And, I mean, he was pretty solid. It got to the point where I felt pretty good when his turn through the rotation came up. I thought, we're going to do all right. He also only had 8 home runs at that time. And let's see, 70 strikeouts on 80 innings, so not a ton there. You'd love to see, you know, 1 strikeout per inning. But this year, I'm just trying to see how many home runs he's given up, because it feels like a lot, and it's only been 11 starts. So he's given up 9 home runs, so way off pace from last year. And you look at Andrew Bailey, and he got all the praise. He was like the greatest pitching coach of all time in the month of April, you know, because just about everybody was pitching well. But now, when you look at it, the only guy who's taken a step forward in the rotation is Tanner Houck. And Nick Pivetta is pitching okay. I'm not going to give Andrew Bailey credit for Pivetta, because this is essentially a continuation of last year for Pivetta. And that arm injury, the forearm strain, has led to an uptick in fastballs from Pivetta as well. I think he's perhaps not as comfortable throwing as many curveballs and as many sweepers. So Bailey hasn't done a ton with Bayo. That's the crazy thing. Dave Bush seemed to get more out of Bayo at this point. The season's still young. We're not even halfway through it yet. We've got roughly, I don't know, 98 or 100 games left. So we'll see. But this was a lineup that you were hoping, you know, this would be a good game to kind of get yourself right. And for 4 innings, it was exactly that. And then he was at 60 pitches when he came out for the 5th. And then things went sideways. And he's going to face probably game 1 of the Yankees, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Game 1 or 2 against the Yankees. So we'll see. But this rotation, you know, is starting to be a huge cause for pessimism right now. And I didn't think Bayo would be someone I'd be worried about.
Quick sidebar about Pivetta before we get into Bayo. Just want to pat myself on the back here a little bit, talking about a vintage Pivetta performance against the Braves. I was the only one that picked us to win game 2 of that series, so just wanted that to be on the record. But all things aside, Bayo, I think, yeah, is a cause for concern. This was a player that had a very strong performance last year. Ironically enough, I feel like he worked more with Pedro than he ever did with Dave Bush. We never heard Bayo linked to Dave Bush's name. It was always, oh, he's under the wing of Pedro in the offseason. He's won Pedro's pitching program. You know, they're calling him Baby Pedro or whatever. But, you know, he wasn't snake bitten by the long ball last year. He kept us in games. He definitely looked like he had the stuff that could be that punch out, that put away. And that just really hasn't been the case for him this year. I feel like he gets ahead in counts and then, you know, just doesn't continue to attack, tries to nibble, and then, you know, when he does make a mistake, they are getting hammered. It was a similar thing that we lamented on Cam Boozer in the Tigers series, is if you're going to make mistakes where they aren't going to kill you. Lester's resurgence in Boston was trying to throw everything on the outside part of the plate, right? So if he hits the strike zone, great. If not, it's in the lefty's batter's box to a righty, or it's inside to a lefty, and, you know, you live to see another day, you live to see another pitch. when he was trying to attack the right-hand side of the plate. You know, he was leaving things in the middle, he was leaving things up, and he was getting kind of batted around. And you can kind of link the same thing to Bayo, right? Find ways to miss where the misses aren't going to kill you. You know, maybe do a little bit more scouting, maybe do a little bit more research, or, you know, kind of find, I guess, like where your safe place is. To link another golf analogy, players try to eliminate one side of the golf course, right? They like to play a certain shot shape unless the course really demands something different. But they also like to know that if I miss, I'm only going to miss the one side, right? So if I'm aiming to hit the ball right to left, I know my miss is going to be on the right side of the golf course, and I can kind of manage my way around. I never put myself in bad positions. And you can kind of do the same thing as a pitcher, right? You want to make sure that when you're missing, your misses aren't going to kill you. You know, they're not going to be in the heart of the zone. They're not going to be up. They're not going to be where they can get loud contact. And it seems like Bayo's kind of getting to that point to where he's getting hit around a little bit. You know, Andrew Bailey has done wonders with a lot of the other members on the rotation. And I'm wondering if maybe that's another reason of frustration is we've seen the leap that Houck has taken. We've seen the leap that Crawford has taken. And, you know, for lack of better terms, Criswell and Pivetta, or at the very least, you know, Pivetta's keeping on what he was keeping on, but Bayo hasn't taken that step or hasn't really gotten any sort of that Bailey benefit, which makes it look all the worse. Gary.
This might sound crazy, but Bayo's ERA is up to 4.78. If he gets torched again, it'll be north of 5. And I kind of fully expect that to happen, especially if the Yankees have Juan Soto back in their lineup by that point. He's got a forearm issue, and there was a Tommy John scare this weekend, although I think they'd find a way to keep Sosa in the lineup somehow, or Sosa, Soto, you know, whether it's at DH or it wouldn't be the most insane thing ever to try him at first. I mean, the Phillies did it with Harper. I never thought I'd see that, but anyway, so Bayo is gonna go against the Yankees, and I'm just thinking, like, some teams might option him to get him right, but we just don't have the luxury of doing that. We have to keep him up here. Another guy who probably needs to be optioned if he gets shelled another time is Cutter Crawford. This is another guy who should probably be sent down to the minors to figure it out, but you can't, because who are you calling up? Josh Winkowski is the easy answer, which isn't ideal. Richard Fitz is pitching pretty well in Worcester, but I don't know if you really want to mess with that. And that's about it. And if you want more bad news, Luis Perales, who I believe is our best pitching prospect, maybe he's number two behind that Gonzalez kid, but he's out with some elbow inflammation right now. So that's scary. That's a guy you might have seen next year at some point. So we're thin right now, and an easy way to fix that, obviously, I mean, I'm beating a dead horse at this point, would have been to get a couple of key free agents in here. But we didn't, and we're extremely thin right now, and the guys we do have are getting battered all over the place.
I mean, it's definitely difficult to plan for a type of season to endure the amount of injuries that we've had. Should we have had more depth? Absolutely. Should we have been more active in the free agency market? Absolutely. I don't think there's any denying that. But, I mean, we've had a cataclysmic amount of significant injuries to significant players that makes it really difficult to say, hey, like, you know, the team, I guess, that we were going into the season ideally with is not performing to what it's supposed to, right? Like, you know, we're looking at three or four guys on the starting rotation, or I mean, on the starting lineup right now, that were still on the roster on opening day. Everybody else is a call up or a slide in, or, you know, a cash considerations type trade. And, you know, I don't care how good your organization is. There's no organizations out there that can really kind of weather that kind of storm, injury after injury at significant positions. But I mean, it's still a referendum on how deep the organization is, that there hasn't been a player, you know, a single player that's been called up that has made, you know, a significant impact like other organizations have.
Well, I mean, with the rotation, though, we're not really that injured. You lost Giolito, which sucks, obviously, and you lost Whitlock, who really had no business being in the rotation anyway. So, I mean, the lineup, I'll give you that all day long. I mean, your heart of the order is, you know, Dominic Smith, Jamie Westbrook, depending on the day, and Connor Wong has had a good season. But you know, I just think the rotation could have been a little bit better. He was up against Nick Nastrini, who the White Sox got in the Lance Lynn Joe Kelly trade a couple seasons ago. And even after that pretty decent start, Nastrini's ERA is still 8.39. And we can only score one earned run against him. He walked five and got away with it. But Bale walked three, by the way. That's not good. That sideways inning, this is how it went for him. He gets an out right away in the first at bat from Sosa. Then Mendick hits a double. He gets another out with Maldonado on a pop-up. So he's two outs. And then he walks Corey Jolks, walks Zach Deloche. The bases are loaded at that point. Andrew Vaughn hits a single to get a run in. And then Gavin Sheets, who might be a bona fide power hitter. Like, this guy might be the real deal. Hits a grand slam on a middle changeup, like Charlie pointed out, a meatball. And that was it. He was one out away from a totally different narrative and kind of lost the mental battle, I think, and in the game as well.
Charlie?
Yeah, so I don't know if I'd call him, and I hear what you're saying, like Gavin Sheets, everyone thought he was going to be second coming when he came to Chicago a couple of years ago. This is his third or fourth year in the bigs. But I don't know if I'd call him a bona fide, like, power hitter. I know that he keeps his strikeout numbers down. He's pretty good with that. But, I mean, the guy doesn't hit 250. His numbers haven't been pretty. His career batting average, I wanted to look it up real quick, is 232. He's got 230 career strikeouts and 1,039 career at-bats. So, you know, a little bit more than 20% of his at-bats are strikeouts. He has 43 career home runs in four seasons. So I'm not sure I'd say that he's a bona fide power hitter. I will say, though, the fact that he hit that grand slam tells me that 85% of players probably would have hit that home run too. I mean, that was just, we talked about it. It was just right down Main Street. And if you watch the pitch again in slow motion, I'm like, oh no. And literally I was hoping, oh, please just be like extra bases. But as soon as he shot it, I mean, it was no doubt. I mean, you can't miss that one. It was so brutally hard to watch after we just got the lead from Bobby Dalbec, the unlikeliest guy to hit a home run for us. And we just threw it away.
Yeah, I mean, he is having probably the best season of his career. He's hitting 246 right now, but some of the advanced metrics look pretty good. I mean, his OPS is almost 70 points above the league average, OPS plus 125. He's an on-base machine at 348, so I mean, it's possible he's still developing, but he's definitely a guy worth keeping an eye on for sure. That was the first grand slam of his career, but he's also a DH too. So it's tough to say they can be really undervalued, in Major League Baseball.
Anything else you gentlemen want to add on Brian Bayo? Alrighty, Terry, who was your dud for the weekend?
I am going outside the box, and I'm going with John Henry. And the reason why is he kind of sneakily gave an interview. I've never heard of the publication. Perhaps you guys have. It was called the Financial Times. So maybe he got it, gave them an interview thinking nobody would even see it. And, you know, that would be that. But he was pressed on some things. And one of them was that he was asked if he had any plans to sell the team. And he said, basically, no, absolutely not. You know, he said that, you know, organizations, I guess, for lack of a better term, Fenway Sports Group, typically they don't sell these type of assets. They're trying to acquire more. So obviously that makes sense. And a couple other nuggets here. The fans' expectations, John Henry kind of took a shot at us and said, you know, fans' expectations usually aren't reasonable because we expect championships all the time. He says fans often have unreasonable expectations and they easily become frustrated and are not going to buy into what the odds actually are. 1 in 20, 1 in 30. I don't know what that was, a direct quote. I don't know where he got those numbers, but I'm pretty sure a lot of those years we probably had a 1 in 10, 1 in 12 chance, which aren't bad odds, but we used to win the division perennially, or at least we're expected to win it perennially. Like, there was a point in history, and we're not even a third wild card perennially. You know, that's brutal. And then he goes on to say that he was asked about the full throttle comments, and Henry expressed some frustration there. He said that Warner's comments essentially overshadowed every other word and every other interview over the winter because it reaches so deeply into the false belief that many fans and media have that you should mortgage the future every year for the present. And then he goes on to say, you have to base acquisitions and dispositions on the future, not the past. That is unpopular generally. Again, that was all a direct quote. Here's my response. Like, that would be a clown take. I would put that on the clown take show if these comments came out on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. That's the show I would have featured this on. I think fans know you're not going to win a championship every year, but you expect in this market with this payroll and these resources to at least be competitive, to be in the conversation, to maybe put yourself in a position in July at the trade deadline to make a move. And when was the last blockbuster trade we had in July? You might have to go back to 2007. When we traded Manny Ramirez in a three-team trade and we ended up with Jason Bay from the Pirates, that trade worked out great. And we had Jason Bay for another season beyond that, and he was great in 2009. The trades I remember, you go back to, let's see, 2013, you got Jake Peavy. That was a nice trade. You only gave up Jose Iglesias. 2018, you get Kyle Schwarber. That was pretty good. You gave up a pitcher who was your number 8th ranked prospect. I'm not even going to bother looking him up to see if the Nationals still have him. I don't think he's seen the light of day. I remember those days. And then Nathan Eovaldi, actually, 2018. I missed that one. You gave up Jalen Beeks. And all of those trades worked out pretty well, and you gave up essentially nothing. I miss those days. I miss those days. And John Henry is just so disconnected. either today or yesterday, while the Red Sox were on the road, the Savannah Bananas were at Fenway Park doing their thing. And awkwardly, there was a clip of John Henry up in the owner's box sitting all by his lonesome, and he seemed to be enjoying a burger or something. He was eating something. And he had these dark sunglasses on and was just kind of, it was a very awkward sight to see him just sitting there alone. And this might be a dark comparison, and it's not, I don't know why it reminds me of this person, but did you guys ever see The Foxcatcher? Steve Carell. Oh my God. It was about a guy named John DuPont who had this fascination with Olympic wrestling, collegiate wrestling, whatever. And he shot and killed the coach who was previously a gold medalist on an Olympic team, I think in the 80s at some point. And John DuPont was this, he was a philanthropist and, gave that program a lot of money and all that. But anyway, he was kind of an odd guy and kind of a loner and an eccentric guy. And, you know, without the murderous ambitions, I kind of consider Henry to be a lot of that. And just kind of awkwardly watching the Savannah Bananas for some reason instead of his own team, and not a popular guy. And I guess before I get it to you guys, I mean, we have this expectation and this hope that someday we will return to what we used to be. But it's been so long that I don't know if that's a guarantee. I don't know that we're ever going to be, that this ownership group is ever going to be as aggressive as it used to be or as passionate with this intense desire to win. Those days might be long gone. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. It's just been so long. And, you know, we're essentially wannabes of the Astros, Dodgers, and Braves. But what we've really become are the Angels, the Marlins, and the Mets. Just a dumpster fire every year. And the Marlins perhaps don't have the resources, but the Mets do. The Angels do. But they're trash because they make dumb decisions like we do. And John, that's why John Henry's my dud.
Charlie?
I feel like that pretty much sums up how most Red Sox fans feel. I read the article and reading and hearing him say that Red Sox fans have unrealistic expectations basically is him calling us delusional. Like, we shouldn't believe that this team should have a chance to win. And the fact of the matter is the Moneyball method works to a certain aspect, but that can't be the only aspect. You need to pay to play. That's how this works. Chicago White Sox are where they are because they spend no money. The Boston Red Sox are where we are because we spend no money. Yeah, you spent money to get a pitcher, a rehab, a redo. Let's see if this works out in Lucas Giolito. I admittedly wanted. I wanted Lucas Giolito. I wanted Tyler O'Neill. But these are all reclamation projects. Players that have been discarded by their former teams, players that have been called garbage in their, you know, past season or two seasons. It just hasn't worked out. So let's give him a chance, player. The Boston Red Sox used to be a top three, top four team spend. We had the Manny Ramirez's, we had the Pedros, we had Curt Schilling. We went out, we got Keith Folk. We needed something, we got it. That was the Boston Red Sox. So if you're going to come out and say, oh yeah, the expectations are to win one every one or, you know, one out of 20 or one out of 30 years, I no longer expect the Boston Red Sox to win a, you know, win a World Series title under the ownership of John Henry. And here's why. On your average of 1 out of 20, you've won us 4, meaning you've got 76 dud years, and you've run out of about 20 of them. You're not going to be alive in 50 years. So who owns the team then? I have no idea. But so long, you know, for as long as John Henry is the owner, the principal owner of the Boston Red Sox, where you're talking about acquiring other teams rather than trying to see your current assets flourish, you're just, you look at the Boston Red Sox as nothing more than a part to your portfolio. You don't care what fans think because we've been telling you spend money. You think we're stupid because you think our expectation is to win every year. That's unrealistic expectations. We know that. John Henry is not a dumb guy. John Henry made a stupid comment and has continued to make stupid comments. And believe you me when I say this, a lot more dumb comments that he probably has said are probably getting nerfed because of some of the assets in his portfolio. For example, if John Henry were to own a newspaper, there are probably certain things that are not going to be getting posted. They'll do whatever they have to do to shine or put a positive light spin on the Boston Red Sox and John Henry. The fact of the matter is, we've spent money poorly. We haven't invested correctly. And for some odd reason, year after year, we continue to draft shortstops, which is cute if you have other positions of depth, which we do not have. So I don't think that John Henry is accepting any accountability. To say that this team, we're not performing where we should have. Did you think that this was a 100-win team? Did John really start 2024 saying, we totally have a shot at going 162? You know, I'm not really good at probability here, guys, but there's a 50% chance that it happens. Either we do or we don't. That's just dumb mentality. It's dumb logic. And John Henry is way too smart to be saying things like that. So this is nothing more than something just like, whatever. You know, people just have, you know, outrageous expectations or unrealistic expectations. And, you know, that's it. That's all it really is. Well, we've been getting slapped around for years, and we may not expect to win a title every year, but the Boston Red Sox have one of the richest histories in all of professional sports. I'm not talking about the Eastern Seaboard. I'm not talking about the United States. I'm not even talking about baseball as a sport in itself. All sports. It's got one of the richest histories, period. You cannot go in year after year being a fifth place team. And that is where the Red Sox will most likely end up at game 162. Forget about the wild card. This team has no chance. We're not going to sniff that. Not unless we decide to all of a sudden inject $50 to $75 million of good quality players onto this team. We've made poor decisions by not making decisions because of our prior president of baseball operations, GM, Chaim Bloom. People can say whatever they want, but decisions didn't get made. That's a poor decision. We had an opportunity to get starting pitching, and we didn't do it. Absolutely a dud. John Henry is going to continue being a dud for as long as the Red Sox are in the basement. He should be an honorary mention or a dishonorable mention every time we talk about duds, because people seem to just want to give him a pass. If the goal is to shed payroll for 100 million or 120 and that's it, you want to have just a bunch of rookies out there, you'll win 40, 50 games a year. You won't sell out the stadium. And I guarantee you, telling people that the Fenway experience is what you're selling the fans on will get real old and real tired very fast, because you're going to be seeing blowouts after blowouts. It's going to be bad.
I think a particularly frustrating aspect of this ownership is, it all feels like forced errors, right? Like, sure, we had a high payroll. Sure, it was bloated after 2018. We had to shed some payroll. We had to make some trades and some moves that were very unpopular to get out from underneath the luxury tax penalties and all of that. Absolutely. And, you know, I think the fans are reasonable and understanding of that. Now, granted, the players that they chose to ship out, I don't think people in this fan base will ever forgive them for trading Mookie Betts, but we understand, like, you don't want to pay the penalties of going over the luxury tax, losing the draft compensation and everything that comes from that. But we're in year four of doing that. We are telling ourselves we can't spend up to the salary cap for no other reason than we've decided that we don't want to. Then in the offseason, you say you're going to go full throttle. We're going to sign players. We're going to be competitive. The expectation is to win championships in Boston. But now you're also saying, well, it's a 1 in 20 or 1 in 30 chance. You know, this team is underperforming, and you're trying to look around for somebody else as the reason for this team not to be doing well. But when you point fingers, you've got four pointing at yourself. A thing that you want to do when you're going to the media, when you're talking about a program, when you're talking about an organization, whether it be in sports, whether it be in business, whether it be in whatever, is you want to make sure that you're on a united front and that everybody's on the same page and that the same message is being sent. And that has never been the case. And it's only one person. Like, if you can't keep one person on, I guess, point, on path, on the same message, like, what are we doing, right? And it is so difficult to repeat in sports, right? The hunger isn't the same. The conditions aren't the same. The, you know, talent, injuries, all of that is not the same year over year. And that's why these dynasties like the Patriots, like Alabama, you know, like Oklahoma softball, to do it year after year after year is just increasingly more difficult and increasingly more impressive. John Henry doesn't have to do that. This front office doesn't have to deal with that, because they can, for lack of better terms, outsource that to the 26 guys sitting in that dugout, the coaches and the staff of the team. Sure, you know, they can go out and get players. They can have those open conversations with the manager and with the coaches that say, hey, you know, we're thin over here. We need this player, or let's push our chips into, you know, go and get this guy that's going to push us over the team. But they don't have to be the one that's in, you know, the weight room grinding, you know, watching tape, watching film, honing their skills. The work gets done for them. They just got to do those last couple of moves that gets the organization over the top. The players in the dugout are going to change year over year. So you're not going to have 26 guys that won a World Series back the next year. You're not going to have that same team construction. So you're going to have new blood. You're going to have an infusion of new talent, an infusion of new hunger that wants to repeat, that wants to win. The hardest part is done for you. Your job, for lack of better terms, is easy. And I'm almost happy that he said that he's looking at it as a business, because now he's just saying the quiet part out loud. We knew that that's how he was running, you know, the Fenway Sports Group. That's how he was treating this team. But he was trying to tell us that he wasn't doing it that way, that he was trying to bring championships to Boston. And, you know, I think he got a lot of run for 04, deservingly so. But he's really kind of wearing that out quickly now as we are mired in this five-year losing stretch, for lack of better terms. You know, 2021 was what 2021 was, but I don't think that was necessarily something that you could hang your hat on and say this was an expectation of that team. So if you're going to tell us that you're running it like a business, then we're going to treat it like it's a business. When it's a product that we aren't interested in, then we're not going to buy it. And then you can't be mad, because we're going to treat this team like a business, as opposed to, you know, the team that we have known to grow in love with. Anything else that you gentlemen wanted to add on John Henry?
Yeah, just super quick. He's in his, I think he's 73, 74 years old, something like that. And he seems like he's in good health and will probably be active with the team for a while. But eventually, his kids or his wife, I was just trying to look that up, eventually his heirs are going to take over. And what will their mindset be? Will it be strictly business? Do they like baseball? Do they hate baseball? I don't know. It's just going to be interesting. And I think Tom Warner is the real hero. And that's the last thing I have to say.
Well, then we'll move it on to the last dud of the weekend. We'll keep this one short and sweet. I got a Garrett Cooper for my dud for the weekend. I remember when we signed him, I was excited. You know, we had gone after major league talent. He had been kind of passed around the National League a little bit, but you know, we at least went after somebody that was in the majors. We didn't do, you know, a prospect cash consideration swap or sign somebody that had been outrighted or, you know, designated for assignment. We went and got somebody. Unfortunately, it just hasn't really panned out in Boston. You know, I think he's hitting, what, 206 on the season, 163 over his last 15. Just never really seemed to get it going. I think his last multi-hit game was at the St. Louis series, which was back in May. It's, you know, a referendum that he's getting significant at-bats at, you know, the heart of the order, but that's kind of where this lineup is. We talked about it a little bit in the Bayo segment, but Garrett Cooper just wasn't getting it done this weekend, came up in a couple of spots, never really seems to get a hit when it matters. So he's my dud. Charlie?
Two words. Goodbye. You've played in twice as many games and done half as much work as you did in Chicago. There's a reason why Chicago got rid of you. You're batting 171 for the Red Sox alone. In 36 games, you have one home run, 11 RBIs. You are DFA material. I'm done on him.
Terry.
All I'll really say here is the guy, even with the bad year he's having between the two teams he's played for, he's still a career 264, 333 hitter with only 57 home runs. So he's not a, you know, he's not a power guy in any sense of the word at any point in his career. But those are respectable numbers. And this should be a cautionary tale of be careful of who you target, because, you know, if their career average isn't great, there's a 50% chance they might end up being worse than that. And so set the bar a little bit higher when you're, you know, and I'm talking about during the winter. This was a during the season move, you know, around the time Casas got hurt. But, he's a mediocre player, and we're not even getting mediocrity here. We're getting far less than that.
Yep, not a lot else to add about that. Do we have any dishonorable mentions from the weekend?
Yes, Cooper Criswell had his sideways inning, only lasted 4 1/3, gave up 3 earned. Let's see. Moving down the list here. I'm not gonna get on his case too bad, but Brendan Bernardino did not have a good outing today in the finale. 1 1/3, gave up 4 hits, an earned run, walked 2. Probably his worst outing of the year without pulling up his game logs. Valdez had a home run in game 1, but everyone crushed it in that game. 14-2 was the score, but otherwise was 1 for 9. Jamie Westbrook, 1 for 9. Not that the bar is set too high for him. And I guess that'll about do it for the dishonorables, unless you want to talk about Tyler O'Neill's durability.
No, I'd like to talk about Greg Weiser. He's had 2 out of 3 games. Now he's had clunkers. So that's not a good sign either. He's he gave 2 home runs against Chicago. That hurts. You know? Oh, so
did he? I only had 1, but you could be right.
I'm pretty sure it was 2. That was in the Friday night game. He pitched
oh,
twice.
Oh, 2. Yeah, in the same game then. Okay.
Yeah, he gave up 2 dingers. I mean, that game was, you know, it's been sad. Games are getting out of hand against teams like that. It's just brutal. But he also didn't do himself any favors against the Detroit game either. So looking back at his little 3-game stretch there, he also kind of had a blip there too. But yeah, I digress.
The pitching program does seem to be kind of at a tipping or inflection point. So it'll be interesting to see how they right the ship as they've had a couple of shaky appearances. I know Bernardino has been nothing but lights out so far. But, you know, We appreciate you all hanging on for this cathartic exercise of the duds segment. Let's flip it on over to the studs segment. Charlie, who do you have for your stud this weekend?
Yeah, so for my stud, David Hamilton. And literally, it just kind of reminded me of, God, it's going to sound funny, but like myself as far as the stolen bases, because that was like the only thing I ever did was steal bases because I'm so short. And my coach was like, yeah, we're just going to make you a stolen bases specialist, which I thought was kind of dumb, and didn't end up wanting to be like the Dave Roberts back in, you know, the 2000s and whatnot. But David Hamilton, 6 for 18, 3 singles, 2 doubles, another home run, 3 runs scored, 4 stolen bases. I don't care that he struck out 5 times because he had 3 multi-hit games. So Hamilton, for me, when you can get a couple multi-hit games in a series, that's great. 3 multi-hit games. You did very well, and I don't think there's anything bad that you can say about that, especially when you average a stolen base a game. So, DH, my stud for the series.
Terry.
You know, I mean, he's played above his head for the better part of a month. On the season, he's hitting .282 with a .339 on base. He was never this good in the minors, I'm pulling it up right now, but I mean, he had very average at best minor league numbers, a .251 hitter with a .346 on base. So I guess you can say he has had pretty good plate discipline all along, but not a ton else to speak of other than the speed, like Charlie said. And here he is on the biggest stage, and he's doing better than even that. And if it weren't for David Hamilton, you probably lose the finale today, because he, he hit that double in the 9th inning, and I think Reese McGuire ended up batting him home later on. He might have even stole third base too, if I remember right. But still, the dude has played above his head, and I've been waiting for him to come back down to earth, but he's still up in orbit somewhere, putting up great numbers, and we'll see what kind of a season, he ends up having. I mean, maybe he's the Travis Shaw type guy that just came up with not the highest of expectations, but had a big season, and maybe this will keep him in the big leagues for years to come at this point. He's 26 years old, so we'll see.
I mean, you hear how, somber and morose the tone of this podcast is, and that's after a 2-2 split with the White Sox. Excuse me. Can you imagine what this would be like if we had lost today's game? And for all intent and purposes, we should have. I mean, we were down 4-3 in the 9th, and David Hamilton literally manufactured the game-tying run. Like Terry mentioned, it's a double, a stolen base, and he comes home on a sack fly, forces a bad throw with his speed. You know, we lose that game without his contributions. I think it's an absolutely very worthy stud for the weekend. He had a home run in the game today as well, if I'm not mistaken. And, the guy has just been playing better and better, He came up, he made a couple of splashy plays. Obviously, we had talked about his speed when he first showed up, but he went on the injured list, took a little while for him to get his feet back. And he's making real life contributions all over the place. So, I think it's a great call for the stud. And these are the type of guys that I was kind of talking about when we were doing our temperature check. It's, in years past and iterations of this team, they roll over and they die. They go down on an immaculate inning in the 9th inning. And, we kind of go on with our Sunday. But, guys like David Hamilton, who are trying to find staying power in the league, refuse to give up, refuse to quit, are always scrapping for that. And that kind of outlook, that kind of play is contagious. And you see it with players like Duran and, Abreu when he was playing, and Rafaela and Valdez when he's up, and it's all these guys that are trying to make the most of their opportunities that is making it interesting to continue to watch this team. Anything else you gentlemen wanted to add?
I'll say this much real quick. As far as DH, Hamilton has also inspired a couple other players to steal bases and kind of go back to what they were known to do. So I'll leave it there in case that, you know, foreshadows too much.
All righty. Terry, who was your stud for the weekend?
I'll keep it brief. My stud was Connor Wong, who was 6 for 15, had a hit in every game, drove in 2 of the 14 runs. And by the way, Woodford was so bad for the White Sox that game, they DFA'd him immediately. So I wonder if it was because he had a bad game or it was because he had a bad game against the Red Sox. I have no idea. But anyway, so Connor Wong is leading Major League Baseball, all catchers right now in Major League Baseball in terms of batting average, and he's right there close to the top when it comes to on base. So one of the best there is continually. I know he had a dud of a at-bat in the Tiger series to essentially blow the game, but typically he's a guy who's coming up big for you in big spots, and I think Breslow's going to field some calls on him in July. Whether he gets moved or not, who knows? Kyle Teal was the best player in all of the minor leagues for the month of May. Hit something like 370, some ungodly number. But yeah, just love to see it. That average isn't really coming down. He's still hitting right around 340. And having a breakout year.
Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that Terry didn't mention, because he basically said everything so far, I mean, he's hitting better this month than he did last month. His batting average before today's game for the month of June is .353 with a pair of RBIs, only a couple strikeouts, has a stolen base, but he's also playing second base. He's had a couple games where they've had a slot him in, and he's not just catching behind the plate. So he's also showing his versatility as well. And right next to availability, versatility is one of the next big, most important attributes you could possibly have as a ball player. So it's going to be hard to ever count him as a dud because he's doing more than his share and what's expected of him.
And he might be the best second baseman on the team. That's the sad world we live in.
I've always said, you know, you'd be willing to trade offensive production out of the catcher spot for a catcher that has good defense and can work well with the rotation. He's doing the defensive part in spades. He's got, you know, a great arm, great pop time, and he's hitting the ball all over the yard. You know, you could argue that he hit the ball too well in the Tiger series. And that's why, you know, it ended up being a flyout to right. But the guy's been a revelation, and the idea of having Wong and Teal behind the plate and future iterations of this team is something that we can get excited about. You know, if McGuire goes on a nice little hot streak before the deadline, maybe we can flip him for some pitching prospects or, you know, some other spots that we, you know, have as points of need. I think that would be a fantastic way to do it. But, you know, we've got a real bona fide major league catcher in Connor Wong, and he deserves to be on the stud list for the remainder of the season, as long as he continues on this trajectory of play. Alrighty, the last stud that we have for this weekend is my stud. I've got Jarren Duran, 5 for 17, a home run, a triple, leading, I believe, 10th triple on the season. Nobody else has seven total runs scored in a series, which, you know, I know it's a four-game series, but that's still crazy. He's absolutely carrying the offense. He's hitting .310 over the last seven, .333 on the month of July. His on-base percentage is up to .425 in the month of July, and that just keeps rising across the season as well. I think his season average is like .265 or such. You know, he had a pretty bad stretch there, but it looks like he's coming out of it. Making smart plays in the field, you know, as Charlie mentioned, the DH effect of being more active on the bases. He had 4 stolen bases in this month as well. And the dude is just starting to be that lizard again. We're starting to see him play with that calm confidence that we had at the beginning of the season. You know, it's very exciting. Anytime the ball gets in the outfield, you're wondering, you know, are we going to get that camera angle between second and third when he's just scooting over there for those frequent triples? But he's been an absolute delight when you know, today's game without him as well. And so he's the stud for me.
Yeah, if I get to talk about Jaren Duran, because I didn't want to talk too much about your stud for this one. Really cool when you have two guys that are just absolute fire on the base paths, because we saw for the month of May, two stolen bases in this series alone, four. So part of that has to do with the Chicago White Sox being bad. Another part is the fact that Jaren Duran, when he's on it, he's on it. And, you know, no, he didn't have a crazy hitting week, but dude, you scored six runs, you stole four bases, you walked four times, and in 20-plus at-bats, you only struck out three times. Yes, you had an error too, but you know what? You still did far more and had a lot more pros than cons in the series. So very easy, Jaren Duran, awesome stud.
Terry?
Yes, so you guys covered a ton of it. I want to point out that he's second on the team right now with walks. And that's been my big complaint, is that he's not drawing enough of them. He was pretty quiet after game one of the series, only had one hit after that first game, but drew three walks in those, plus one walk in the game that he went 4-for-5. So that's an important number for me. When that comes up, everything else goes up. Another thing that's impressive, the Red Sox are 33-33 right now. That's not the impressive thing, but that's 66 games. And that's the number of games that Jaren Duran has played in. I think he's a couple of those weren't necessarily starts, but he did come into the game in a pinch hit situation. So the dude's been healthy. He's been active. And I'm just seeing right now. Okay. So Rafaela has been in one less game at 65. Then it drops off quite a bit after that. Devers is 54. Connor Wong has played in 48, but obviously he's the catcher. So I just can't help but be impressed with Duran. He is a bona fide leadoff guy. He's a bona fide outfielder. All these boxes that you couldn't check off 2 years ago, they're all checked off now, and they are what they are.
I mean, it's just great to have speed back at the top of the lineup too. You know, somebody to set the table for Devers or Yoshida or Casas or, you know, whomever ends up hitting behind him, Smith, Cooper, Hamilton, whoever it ends up being. But is there anything else that you gentlemen wanted to add? Do we have any honorable mentions from this weekend?
There were a few. Rob Refsnyder, 6-for-18, had a three-hit game in the opener of the series. Today in the finale was 2-for-5 with a run batted in. Let's see. Rafaela was 6-for-18. Four of those hits were in the first game with four runs driven in. He did strike out six times over the next three games, though, so that continues to be a concern. His chase rate is just unbelievable right now. Bobby Dalbec hit a home run. I love how I called him Bobby Dalbec there, but he's just Bob now. That's what they call him on Twitter. And even the beat writers, and I think Lou Maloney calls him Bob. You know, Bob just hit a home run. And, yeah, Bob's like your neighbor, right, who – you know, he hangs out somewhere else, which is, you know, like Dalbec does typically. And he's just a good guy and he helps when he can, you know. And, you know, that's why Bob is just a fitting name. And which is really resonating with Charlie right now. That's what it is. He's just Bob.
And we're going to get to a point, Terry, when he goes 0-for-5 with four strikeouts. We're going to say, all right, you know, next game.
Yeah. That's when you want to put a fence up so you don't see Bob as much. But anyway, Tanner Houck was his normal solid self. Seven innings, just three hits, two earned runs, struck out nine. Brad Keller surprisingly didn't suck at all. I take that back. He did give up a earned run in this first of his two appearances, but Zach Kelly continues to have a good year. Slayton had a pretty solid outing today. His defense let him down, which led to three runs coming in, but solid there. And whether we love him or hate him, Kenley Jansen is having a good year. He dropped his earned run average 37 points today, so that's 261 on the year. He will have some value here as we get towards the end of the month, but I might have missed someone in there, but that was about the gist of it for the honorable mentions.
Anything else that you gentlemen want to add for the remainder of this episode? Alrighty, we thank everybody for joining us for this cathartic therapy session after a 2-2 split against the White Sox. Everybody have a great day and take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.